At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hey everybody, I'm Rima.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Strange Indeed, a podcast dedicated to the show The Haunting of Hill House.
Today we'll be covering the fourth episode from Netflix TV series The Haunting of Hill House, titled The Twin Thing.
The Twin Thing. What a good episode. What'd you think of this one this week, Sean?
I liked it. It was pretty intriguing. Luke is a character I think that from the first three episodes I kind of wanted to hate. And this episode really kind of shows a lot of his struggles and kind of made him not seem as much of a letdown as kind of the family led you on to believe. So I was really excited to see everything from his perspective.
Yeah, I agree. I really am glad we got this episode to kind of get to know Luke a little bit and about his story. I mean, I already kind of fell in love with little Luke, young Luke. He's so darn cute and adorable. How can you not love little? I know, and his little voice inflection. I mean, he could probably wrap any adult around his fingers with that sweet little voice inflection he's got. But so yeah, it was good to get to know the older version of Luke this time around. We've certainly got a very limited picture of him prior to this, so I'm glad we got to know him a little bit more. So with that being said, let's jump into our top five of this week. Why don't you kick us off?
All right, so my number five, I'm going to start with, it's kind of a love interest of Luke's. It's Joey. Mm-hmm. So he's in his rehab. We see that, you know, it's kind of different from the ones we saw. It's like usually like the day before or a couple days before, but this one was like 90 days out, 30 days out. Mm-hmm. And you see him going back into rehab. And you see him finding somebody in rehab that kind of they create a bond. And you get to see him go all the way to 90 days. And I think a lot of it has to do with this character, Joey, who I think this is the first time we've seen her. I don't remember seeing her before.
Yeah.
And, you know, you definitely learn. I've never been to any kind of rehab or anything. I don't really know anybody that's been to rehab. So, like, everything I know about it's from, like, movies or really this show, I think, kind of explained a lot of the inside details of it, if it's true. But the counselor explains and says, hey, you know, we don't want to create relationships your first year in rehab, especially with another addict, because addicts are not reliable. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you think about it, if you're in like one of these situations and you fall in love with somebody and you really kind of put your progression and your sobriety on them, if they relapse, it's probably pretty likely that you will.
Yeah.
And we learn in this that Joey does end up leaving. And he goes out to find her because he cares for her. And that's kind of where we learn, like, he really says, like, hey, we're not in a relationship. It's not that. It's not that. But you can tell it really is. It's some kind of stronger bond. And multiple times in this, when he's interacting with her, I was expecting him to either – because we all saw what happened when he was in Steve's apartment. He broke into it and he came down, like, all – like, looked like he was coming down from a high. But – so I'm expecting somewhere in this for him to actually use, but he played strong. Like he was in an area where you saw it getting passed around. He could see it. He could identify it, but he was looking for Joey to help her. And when he does, he does all he can to try and help her out. But the part that kind of got me too is she's like, he tells like, hey, I can go find my brother. We'll get some money. We'll stay someplace safe. You know, we'll try and ride this out. Mm-hmm. And he goes, gets the money and she comes back and the alley scene.
Oh, yeah.
So they're standing there. It's like very emotional. Like I think he kind of feels like he did the right thing. And she gives him a kiss and she walks down there to go pee. That's what she says. And I wrote down on that. I'm like, okay, is she going down there to use again? Which to me would have been like bad. Yeah. But she actually, and being a former, I guess you're never really are you a former junkie or are you always a junkie or an always an addict? I don't remember how.
I think you're always an addict. I don't know if you're always a junkie or not. I think you're always an addict, I guess, even if you're sober.
Yeah. That makes sense. But she ends up going down the alleyway, and him being in an attic probably kind of broke it down like pretty quickly when he hollered and she replied. It's like, okay, and reaches for the money, and guess what? Money's gone.
Yeah.
And he ends up getting an ass whooping, and
oh, does he? He's not always having a good day.
No. I always feel like these are the shows, like these are like scenes you put together and show kids, like, hey, this is probably another good reason not to do drugs.
Yeah, I think, and like you, I haven't had personal experience in rehab, for which I'm grateful, nor have I had someone really close to me that has been through that, and for that I'm grateful as well. But I feel like from what I've read, and it seems very accurate from what I've been told, from what I've been read and hearing it secondhand, it seems like a pretty good depiction of addiction. And you know, what it can do to families and what it does to that person. And, you know, we know that Luke has struggled with this for 10 years, you know, and to hear that 90 days out of the 10 years that he has struggled with his addiction, that he has, that's the longest that he's been sober. And, I think it portrayed it pretty well. I'd be interested to hear what other folks have to say, if either they've been through it themselves or had a loved one and has, you know, kind of more lived that experience and what it's like coming from that perspective. But I think it made a lot of sense when they were talking about, you know, this is why you don't. I always kind of wondered that, not having been through the experience myself, of why they don't really, like, if you're not already in a relationship, like if you're not married and in rehab or something, that you don't develop relationships during that first year. They don't encourage it because of that. I've always kind of been curious, but it made a lot of sense to me in this episode when they kind of talked about it. And he makes a good point. It's like, how are you supposed to go through this without friends?
Well, especially with his family not really even being there for him.
Yeah, who else does he have? And in rehab, or at least it seems from what I've seen from my very limited exposure, it seems some rehabs, you're not even supposed to have any family contact for a while, right? Like you're supposed to like completely immerse yourself, you know, in the experience in rehab and devote all of your time and energy to that and not have like the distractions of family, because family can not always be such a positive thing, right? Yeah. I mean, it could be a lot of your family issues as to maybe why you're using to begin with, because you can't deal with it.
I think that's what Joey says. Like sometimes your contact is your mom, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So it makes sense.
Absolutely. So I think it made a lot of sense, you know, and it certainly, but you kind of see both ways. It's like, well, how, I mean, if you're at rehab, you are there, you live there, you're living there with all these people, you're going through the same experiences, you have the same kind of thoughts and feelings and reasons why you're there. And how can you not, you know, form deep relationships, even if it's not a romantic type relationship, you know, of course you're going to form friendships. And that, I think it would be really hard to draw that line, you know, and to not cross it over into being too dependent on that person and having your sobriety hang on theirs. So I don't know. I can see where that's pretty tricky to navigate. Really felt for him in this one.
Yeah, it was a tough episode for him. Like even just again, like there's a lot of like real life in some of these, and this was definitely one of those moments with him and Joey. So my number five is just Joey.
That's a good one. She's interesting, and I hope that we get to see like more of her, or at least find out maybe what happened with her. Maybe find out why she left rehab and what happened or whatever, because I don't think we really know that. So it was interesting, and maybe we won't. I don't know. Maybe her story with, as far as Luke's story is done, I don't know. That's a good number five. I'm going to tag onto that because my number five is actually just kind of talking about Luke's addiction. I feel like based on how the show has laid it out for us at this point and what we know in the past episodes that we've seen, including this one, Luke started using drugs because his hauntings never stopped.
Yeah.
You know, we just terrible, terrible and scary as shit. I'll say that. You know, we saw many of his experiences that happened in Hill House, even in the prior episodes, like the episode before that was Theo's episode, the experience he had in the basement alone would, I think,
good point, yeah.
turn me to drugs. That fucking basement ghost, I mean, Jesus, is got to be one of the scariest damn things I've ever seen in my life. So even that alone, that was not even a Luke-centric episode, but that is something else that's happened to him. And he's got a ghost as a as an imaginary friend. And then we have this episode, you know, of his experiences and kind of getting more of a deeper dive into things that happened to him there at Hill House. And then, of course, the trauma that he went through with the rest of his siblings of losing his mom in the way that he did. And he was one of the youngest. The twins, you know, are the youngest of the siblings. And, you know, for that to happen, you know, at such a young age was so traumatic. So it's just interesting to see that that is kind of what turned him to, which I think probably makes sense. I mean, you probably kind of put that together, right? I mean, it would only make sense that out of all the siblings and everything that they've been through and either experience at the house or the traumatic experience of what happened with their mom, and then their relationship with their dad, you know, that it kind of almost, you know, well, you throw a coin at one of them and one of them's going to be a drug addict because you know, what's happened. They're all messed up to some extent, right?
So when you throw it with the two of them, Nell and Luke, they're twins. So they're kind of getting double side. They're getting like double hit with it. You know, if she gets, you know, scared or has something happen to her, then Luke feels it and then vice versa. So
yeah,
they're almost getting it double.
Absolutely. That's true. Yeah. So what they both kind of feel and experience what the other is. So yeah, definitely. That's even more traumatic. So if something's going on with her, he's feeling that too. And that's gotta be pretty tough to take on, you know, other people's feelings. Like we saw with Theo. Theo, that's why she's kind of isolated herself and wears her gloves. She isolates herself because she just can't, it's too much to handle. And she's handling it clearly better than Luke. But in this episode, he's really embarking on that infamous fourth step, which is a fearless moral inventory. And we see that he's kind of wrestling not so much with the sins he's committed against his family. I mean, he, you know, he's done the lying and the stealing and stuff that's kind of standard behavior for an addict. If you have family, you know, you know, there's probably some of that happening and stuff. But I think that what he really hasn't forgiven them for, and what we see throughout this whole episode is his family not believing him.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's about the ghosts and things that happened to him there at the house, like with the basement ghost, his parents didn't believe him, you know, at all. Theo believed him, even though she didn't see it. But, you know, his family doesn't ever believe him. And they don't believe him not only about the ghosts and experiences that he had as a kid, but also, they don't really seem to have much belief that he's ever going to kick his habit. And I found that just so sad. And it's like he doesn't even want to call Steve with his news about his 90-day chip.
Yeah.
I mean, that's such an awesome thing for him to have achieved, that being the longest that he's gone sober in 10 years. And he can't even call Steve about it because he knows, he's like, he's not going to believe me.
Yeah. Because we saw the interaction where it was like 30 days clean or something like that.
Yeah.
And Steve kind of says, like, I gave like all the cares I had, like, you've taken them all, so I have none left, kind of thing. I don't know if it was cares, but basically just like, and I mean, I can understand that to an extent. Like, that's got to be a tremendous amount of stress and pain on just family members too. And when you invest so much into somebody at like some point, like, listen, you're just got to do this on your own now because I've spent 15 years of my life trying to help you out. And until you want to help yourself, I can't help you anymore. You've taken everything I've got to help you to this point.
Right. And it was heartbreaking to see. And it seems like the only one that's had faith in him was Nell.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of talk about that or, you know, hear about it a little bit in this episode. We don't see, you know, Nell in the episode except for in her form when she appears in his room, like she did with some of the other siblings. But, you know, we don't get to see, haven't yet seen, I feel, that relationship with Luke and Nell, except for when they're kids. I haven't seen that adult relationship just yet. I mean, we've seen it a little bit when when they were taking him to rehab, and I guess it was for the first time, I think it was, in one of the episodes. But we haven't really got to see a whole lot of them, which I really hope that we get to see a little bit more of that. But it seems like she's really the only thing, or the only one that really believes him, and it's probably because of the twin thing. You know, she can maybe feel that from him, that he truly maybe wants to get better. But it's just really kind of sad you know, to kind of see that. And it kind of just breaks my heart, you know, for Luke. I think we got a little bit more because you just kind of want to write him off, right?
Yeah.
In the beginning,
oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, he's just a junkie and he's not really contributing anything and he's not really helping with the family or anything. He's just a junkie and we've kind of written him off. So
yeah, and before this episode, you're like, okay, I can, like, the things he's went through, I can see why he would move to some kind of pharmaceutical drug type thing to kind of, you know, kill the pain and kill the emotions he's got to go through every time he sees a ghost. But yeah, you kind of learn, it's like, you, like you said, you
deeper.
Write him off. Yeah.
Yeah. It goes a little bit deeper than that. You really kind of get an understanding. I think it, at least for me, I got a little bit more of an understanding as how he is, and why he is. And I like that perspective. So that's my number five, is just kind of, you know, talking about Luke's addiction a little bit specifically.
I like it. So this will probably be a little bit short and sweet, but it kind of ties into like nobody believing him. But mm-hmm. One thing I thought was really, really interesting was when he was at Steve's, when it was Steve and his wife were still together. And it's like, I think it was like his 30-day sobriety or something like that.
Yep.
He, Joey talks about how Luke likes to write too.
Mm-hmm.
He writes a lot of short stories, writes a lot of poems and things like that. And kind of like what you're saying, where it just nobody seems to believe in him. Steve almost is taken aback by it. Are you trying to take my gig? Like you're obviously not as good as me.
Like that's my thing.
Yeah. And I mean, Steve is probably very well spoken, well written person, mm-hmm. but his claim to fame was taking the stories of his family and profiting from it, which we've talked about.
Right.
It's like, okay, is that good or bad?
Mm-hmm.
And Luke is doing the same thing, but he's doing it with his own experiences that he probably hasn't told anybody or nobody's believed him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious what that'll play is. Like, it just shows a little bit deeper level to Luke that he's not just some guy who's been going around. He actually does have some talent and skills.
Yeah.
And so I'm really curious to see what comes of, if anything comes from that. But my number four, it's like I said, it's kind of short and sweet. I don't know if you have any input on it as well, because it kind of tied back into that dinner party where it's, you know, Luke's the fuck up who nobody wants to hang out with.
Yeah, my number four kind of ties into that a little bit. So I'll just jump into that and just kind of have a conversation with you about our number four, since it kind of goes into that, not just Steve's treatment, but the family in general, and maybe kind of why they are the way they are. Because I feel like this show, I'm just going to start saying that this show so far, because this is episode four, and we have 10 episodes in all, so we have a ways to go. In the four episodes that I've seen so far, I feel like the show has such a unique way of making you sympathize with all the characters.
Yeah, I agree.
Because like we were just saying, like Luke, so far in the first three episodes, we didn't get much from him. You just kind of you want to know more, but we're not getting it. And from what we've seen, it's so easy to write him off. Like, oh, Luke's the junkie of the family. And, you know, that's just, you know, that's all it is at this point. But we got so much more, and it was hard to feel sympathy for him, because it's like, look, we catch him in episode one stealing an iPad and the camera, which we learn in this episode had a little bit of a different story to it. But that's how we are introduced, is he looks completely strung out, like he's needing more money for drugs and whatever. When Steve sees him, he's treating him like this has happened 100 times.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
I mean,
so
that's your first thought, is like he's breaking in, he's going to get more drugs, he's cold. It's L.A., I think, right?
Yes, they are
so
in L.A.
Why is he cold in L.A.?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But in this episode, like first when we met Luke, and from episodes 1, 2, and 3, you're just kind of like, God, Luke, you piece of shit, junkie that steals from your family, and look at what they've done for you. They've put you in rehab how many times? They've supported you how many times? Given you money, and you just can't get your shit together.
Yeah. You took a day pass to come to your sister's wedding high.
Exactly. So it's like you have not that he can't be sympathetic, but for me, it was kind of hard to sympathize with him. But in this episode, it really turns the tables. You know, you're at first feeling bad for the other siblings for what they've endured with Luke and his illness. But in this episode, now you're sympathizing with Luke. And it's so easy to do so when you see how heartbreaking this episode was, especially when you see that sweet little boy that we've gotten to know in the other episodes and you see him grow up to be this way. It just breaks your, it breaks my heart. I won't speak for everyone, but it breaks my damn heart. But I see, you know, that now we're sympathizing with Luke and you can kind of see you, but you, I feel like I can also sympathize with Steve and the siblings because you can see why Steve was being a little bit of an asshole and see why he treated Luke the way he is because you know that this is repetitive behavior. And you get to a point, it's like when Shirley and Theo were talking in another episode, you know, Theo's like, I'm just done with him. I cannot be around him anymore. She's gotten to the point, and I think a lot of us do, when someone's so toxic in your life, sometimes you have to cut them out.
Yeah.
You know, to keep, because they keep letting you down and they've constantly lied to you. They're stealing from you. And so you can kind of justify Steve and their, and the siblings' behavior a little bit when, like when they, he does find Luke stealing his iPad and camera, he's of course just assuming, oh, he's looking for money for drugs. And, but then you can also see it from Luke's perspective that Steve's a total asshole, that Luke needs someone to believe in him, and his family, except for Nell, has let him down every time. So it's like, it, that's what's so fascinating about this show is that it's like you can just, it makes it more real because
I feel like
all of us, even if you don't have someone who deals with an some type of an addiction in their life, you know, you can kind of see, you know, their side of things, you can see your side of things, their behavior's justified, your behavior's justified. And I've just found this really fascinating. And, you know, it's like you were even talking about Steve was an ass for how he treated Luke when he was 30 days sober.
Yeah.
Not even willing to believe, not like, hey, bro, that's great. I'm so proud of you. 30 days, let's go 30 more. And, you know, he really kind of just was like, yep, been here before, you know, we know how this is going to turn out. And so, I don't know, I just thought that his, you know, I just wanted to kind of take a closer look at not just Steve's treatment of Luke, but all the siblings, but Steve specifically, since he was kind of more of a focal sibling in this other than Luke, and how you can kind of see both sides and how it's kind of like this vicious circle, you know, that the siblings can't get behind Luke and believe in him and thinking, and it's like, they just can't get their minds around that. If they believe in him a little bit, that that might be something that turns him around.
Agreed. And I thought that this episode did a great job kind of even, I mean, this whole series so far up to this point did a good job of kind of influencing the audience's opinion of Luke too.
Yeah.
Because you open this episode with him at day one of going back to rehab and he's, he looks like shit and looks horrible. And then you see 30 days, and then you see him at 90 days, which is the day, around the day or so that he went and saw Steve. And like, you see this guy who doesn't look like, he looks like he's got normal complexion now. He looks healthy. Yep. He looks like he's kind of starting to go down the right path. You're like, holy crap, he's turned it around. And so great job editing where just they put you in the boat of like, oh, great, here we are. We're going to watch this guy do drugs and, you know, make, you know, fail people again and whatnot. And it's going to be sad and depressing. It's like, well, it's sad and depressing, but for a completely different reason, because at this point, it's like the whole world's against this guy.
I know. I know.
The whole world really and supernatural world.
I know. He's got everything against him. The ghostly world and the, yeah, the natural physical people walking around. So, ugh, it's heartbreaking because you just want to shake him and go, you know, dang it. Just snap out of it and look at him. He's trying and have some faith in him because sometimes that's all someone needs, you know? Anyway, that was my number four. Kind of rambled a little bit.
So my number three, I simply just titled Come Home. I didn't really notice it in any other episodes besides this one and then the one at the funeral home. But whenever Luke sees his mother, her eyes make two flashes like the porch light.
Ugh. Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
That's a good pickup.
So I'm kind of curious if I go back and look for it at certain points in these episodes, if each child is going to see those flashing of the porch lights that is basically calling them to come home. That's why I'm wondering if the next episode, that's why we see why Nell went back home. Because we saw one other set in that little forever home, the porch light kind of flashed twice and it was like, oh, time to come home.
Yes.
So I'm really, really curious about that. I it might just be this, specific to this episode. Maybe I didn't miss anything, but if you go back and like you look at Steve's episode and all the other episodes, and like somewhere in there, there's a flashing of lights, which I feel like there was flashing lights when he was in that one house. Steve's anyway, like lightning maybe or something like that.
And
or
we
maybe,
just didn't know yet. We exactly, just didn't know like to make something of that, or it could have meant something at the time because we hadn't been at that episode yet. Oh, damn it.
And it might be
we could go back and watch this damn show like five more times and we're probably going to get more and more from it every time.
But that might be a little bit of a stretch, but I'm kind of curious that like this is the first person that's seen their mom that we know of, right? No,
Shirley saw her on the table after she had worked on Nell. She saw her mom on the other gurney in that room. I don't know what that room is called there in the basement of the mortuary, but.
But yeah, my number three is just Come Home.
Ugh, that's a really good pickup. I don't really discount too much not being connected somehow, because I feel like it's done in a very subtle way. I think it's not a lot of in your face stuff. So I wouldn't discount that's probably connected. I like it. Damn it. I'm going to go back. I'm never going to get out of this show. This show's just going to wrap me up and I'm going to be watching it forever and get something out of it every time. I'm never going to escape being scared. My number three is going to be pretty short and sweet because I don't want to dwell on it too long, but I was really impacted with the speech in the beginning with the soldier and the runny eggs story. And I'm so glad that I was not eating runny eggs as the story. And I don't know if I can eat runny eggs again, but I'm really glad that I wasn't eating them at the time. Sorry for anyone that was and listened to that story. But I really enjoyed that story. I thought that we've got a lot of monologuing in the series so far, and we've gotten lots of stories from people, whether it's the siblings or whether it's a different character that talk a lot. But this one really impacted me. The guy says, see, the thing is, most folks don't know what happened. Most folks don't know what happened to eyeballs in a fire, and the right kind of fire, they can melt like runny eggs on black skin, you know? And I mean, that fucked me up pretty bad. Anyway, 6 months later, I'm back in the States. Pretty soon I start seeing that little dead girl's face everywhere. It's in the clouds. It's in the dark, on fabric. It's fucking everywhere, you know? That little girl's charred body and melted eyes running down her cheeks. And pretty soon, before I know it, I'm using again. So one night, I drop a little acid, and there she is. And anyone who's done that knows that that's what happens. Not that I know. I mean, it's growing out of the goddamn wallpaper, you know? I mean, and she's staring at me, eyeless even, I can tell. So I grab this knitting needle, and all I can think about was how to make it stop. Seemed like a good idea at the time. So then I'm blind. But I mean, I like can't see anything blind, right? Thing is, I still see her. I can't see anything else. I see her. Crispy kid with the runny egg eyes. It was so impactful. That dude, I don't know the actor's name, but I give him all the kudos in the world for, I mean, getting that story at the very beginning really held me and grabbed my attention. And I felt very sympathetic towards that character for having gone through something so traumatic in his life that, yes, he was on drugs when he did it and was not in the right state of mind, but feeling like the only way that he was never not going to see that again was to make it was like to blind himself. Mm-hmm. And then still sees it. And I feel like it just really impacts me, I guess, because he's a vet, and I feel like vets that when they come home, so many suffer from PTSD, and I feel like so many don't get the help that they need, and so many terrible tragedies happen because they don't get the help that they need, and not enough attention is paid. And maybe I don't have a solution. I do not have an answer to this problem, but I just, whatever it is, I feel like more needs to be done to see warning signs and to reach out and to do things to help people who go through these types of things in their life in war and have to do the things that they do and see the things that they see. And then they go on drugs and then they blind themselves because of something that they can't stop seeing. I just feel like more needs to be done. So maybe that's why it was maybe a little bit more impactful, because I have lots of people in my family that are vets and are currently either still serving or currently served at one time. So maybe that's why it made an impact on me, but it really drew me. I thought it was a very impactful story. And I just wanted to kind of mention it because I thought it kind of also goes with the whole theme as well that we see a lot through this show, which I'll talk about again further up in my list. But I just wanted to, what did you think about that? Did it grip you?
It was, I mean, super impactful. I mean, you have the story of a guy talking about, I mean, it definitely kind of was the same thing like with Luke. Like Luke's trying to get away from this experiences that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this, you know, whenever like I complain about things, it's like, well, I mean, I don't really have it that bad.
Yeah.
And so you wonder if Luke's sitting there and he's like, he's hearing this horrific story of what this guy went through and what he did to his own eyes. And you know, he still sees it. And then the counselor's like, oh, well, would you like to go next, Luke? And he's like, you mean follow that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I thought I saw a ghost when I was a kid and it made me do drugs. Yeah.
Right.
Poor me. But that kind of ties into my two a little bit more. So mine was the 90-day speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's interesting when he's going through this 90-day speech, he starts kind of talking a lot about, like you said, you know, 10 years, 90 days clean, the steps that he was going on with, like kind of going back over the stuff that he did to people's kind of where he always goes back to relapsing. And even at this point, it was extremely against him to relapse. I mean, mm-hmm. not only did he hit the person he kind of created a relationship with left, his brothers and family aren't checking on him or care about him. He goes out, he's sitting there, he's seeing all of these people basically do, or he's at least able to identify the ones that are buying and selling drugs. So he mm-hmm. knows how to get it, knows where to get it. He goes and steals money so he could easily buy it then. Joey, when he finds her, has some honor, I believe. And even to the point where she leaves him and he gets mugged. And like he has got to be pushed to the brink of being like, fuck this. I'm just going to go back to the lifestyle I was living and mm-hmm. just try to forget anything and everything. But he fights it and does an extremely great job fighting it. And even to the point where like he's freezing to death because of what I think is the twin thing. Like he, at the very end of this, he talks about being cold and stiff.
Uh-huh.
And to me, that's him feeling Nell dying or dead.
Yep.
And to go even a step further, like, If you're on the brink, all these things happen to you just in a normal day life where you're trying to, you know, not be a junkie anymore. You're trying to, you know, you're an addict, of course, still, but you're trying to keep clean. Now, add on top of that, this ghost that you saw in your house when you were 4 is floating around with his back to you now.
Ugh, yes.
Like, fuck that. And we figure out, like, he starts counting, like, 7 every time. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is... like, I don't know what this is, if it's a tick or what it is, but he's probably going to relapse. Like, you want to reach the TV and help him, but you learn that's him putting up a shield around himself to fight these things off.
Yes.
So, again, this show, like, as he's given this inspirational 90-day speech, we get to see him getting mugged and the shit kicked out of him. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad he didn't relapse. Like, the interaction he had when his brother showed up, like, he was like, in tears, like I did, like I feel like I'm coming down, but I swear to God, I didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And like, how messed up that would be that you would be in that situation, and just very, very unfair to this kid. Like, this is a life that just is super unfair. But yeah, my number two is just kind of that 90-day speech.
That was such a heartbreaking speech. We got really great speeches both from the vet in the beginning, and then Luke's 90-day speech. It just, I think I'll just admit, yeah, I probably cried a little bit during Luke's speech because my heart just continuously throughout this whole episode just broke so much for him. And what really broke my heart is as you mentioned, he's doing all of this for his friend Joey. Now, whether or not to him, you know, they can't have a romantic relationship while they're in rehab, but is it going that way? I have no idea. So whether or not for him, it's just, hey, this is my really good friend that I care about. But she stuck with him and believed in him. And I think with that is what kind of helped carry him to get to that 90 days. And then because of how much she supported him and believed in him, which is the belief that he needed from his own family, you saw the lengths that he went to for Joey, someone he knew just a short time, and the lengths that he was willing to go through. He put himself in the middle of Junkie Town, where he could have easily scored and been tempted. I mean, he's only 90 days out. That's still pretty damn fragile, man. I mean, when you're talking sobriety, you're still I mean, I know it's hard whether it's 90 days or 5 years or 10 years, but, you know, 90 days is still pretty damn fresh. And so to put yourself in the middle of all that and have the faith that you can, like, resist going and just getting some drugs because you're right there in front of it. But the fact that you can hold out, you're on a mission, you know, you're there to help find your friend who has believed in you. So you want to return that. So it really breaks my heart to see that this is who Luke can be if he had the right support for his family. And then he would go to those same lengths for his family if they would only believe in him like Joey does. So that really breaks my heart that he has to kind of outsource this and that he has to direct all of that energy and love and faith into someone else that's given it to him because his family doesn't. And it just makes the story all that more heartbreaking. But it was a damn good speech from Luke there at the end. So sad. Oh, that was so good. That's such a good number two. I like it. Well, that number two kind of goes into my number two, which is the theme of real life trauma that we keep getting over and over again, which I like. I'm not complaining about it, but it's just something I pick up on that we're continuously getting. So we got in this episode, the blind guy in rehab, super heartbreaking and sad, but it's real life trauma that we see in the series that we're getting a lot of. Last episode, it was a little girl that was molested by her foster family. That was the most evil, scary thing, more so than the ghosts that we've seen throughout. And I don't know yet. I'm just kind of on the fence and I don't know what I should believe. I know we're only four episodes in. I don't know if we'll ever know, but I'm kind of struggling yet if the hauntings that the kids experienced at Hill House are like some type of manifestation based on something that happened to them. But I kind of hope not, because I want the house to be haunted. I mean, I want it to be haunted because I think it's kind of cheap to go the other route. I think there's enough weirdness and we've seen the hidden ghosts and things in the background, things that happen. I mean, if you take it outside the fact of the basement ghost that's in front of your face, the ghost, the creepy bowler hat ghost in this episode that will make me never sleep again. I feel like there's enough creepy weirdness in this house that's happened that you can justify that it probably really is haunted, and I want it to be haunted. But I also feel like with what we keep getting over and over week to week, that there's just something that happened that maybe has amplified the experience for the kids in this creepy haunted house, that maybe it's made it worse. I don't know, but I don't know. I feel like we keep getting this and I don't know where it's going or if we'll get an answer, but I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think we talked about that a little bit last episode, but if it's, you know, like you try to think like, was it, you know, did the dad do something to the family? Was it, it's cause I mean, in the first episode we see he's kind of visited by some type of ghost, it looks like. But then again, like you could definitely make this a very psychological thing that's what he's made himself to believe, to hide all the bad things that he either did or happened to the family in that house. Would it be cheap to do that? I think so. I don't know if that's how it ended, if I'd be happy with it. I'm sure there's a way you could do it right that you're like, okay, that was kind of clever, but definitely leaves a lot of room for like, okay, well, why there's so many ghosts type of things. And again, like there's so much realness in this show when you're looking at all the characters that you kind of could believe that would be the case, although there is some supernatural with the daughters all having like the gift to feel each other and or to feel different things. And then even like the twin thing like that, if it was just him and them like having like, oh, I feel weird, like something's weird with Nell, but like he was full on like freak out mode.
Yeah.
And I think to actually have that be something, it would have to be supernatural in my opinion. But like I said, I'm excited to get through the series because these episodes are set up very much like what I like. I like vignette-style episodes.
Yeah.
Where you kind of focus on just like individual stories, and that's what we're getting here. So I'm really, really digging that. So
this has been
probably Black Mirror, Stranger Things, maybe to an extent, but this would probably be between those two somewhere where I just want to keep going to next.
I know it's hard to it's kind of nice in a way because you can kind of process and absorb and think about because there's so much in an episode to take in and to dissect. But at the same time, it's like I just want to binge it one time all the way through and then, you know, get there and then come back and, you know, kind of ponder and rewatch it and stuff. But it's okay. We're getting ready to change that soon anyway. I'm sure we'll probably announce it later in the in the podcast, but we're getting ready to get to that. So that's some good thoughts. What is your number one?
So my number one, I'm guessing it probably is going to be your number one, but it is The Floating Man. Right away we find this hat. And again, like whenever like there's old stuff, like things that get passed around, I'm like, oh man, do you really want to mess with that?
Nope.
And that night you hear a thump. Thump. Thump.
I still hear it, yeah.
Doors opening and like, oh my God, like the kid like sees it and is like, fuck that. Runs in his room, hides under his bed. The only thing that would make this more fucked up is if he turned around in his room and like the bent neck lady was there. Like, double fuck this kid. But he hides under the bed, holds his breath. He thinks he's safe, lets it out. We don't even really get a full view of the floating man. We just see him flip his big, like, bony fingers reaching under the bed, flips it open with his hat on. And again, like, a lot of the characters, we haven't seen them haunted too much outside of the house. Mm-hmm. But we see the floating man with his back to Luke in the, you know, the junkie park. And he starts like floating back up to him back to back as he does his counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And he stops. Starts coming closer. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Stops. And then all of a sudden at some point, counting doesn't work. And this reminds me of a dream I had. So when I was a kid, I was extremely scared of Freddy Krueger. Mm-hmm. And I had a dream very vividly in my old house. I was living in the house at the time, but the basement was on the other side. And I was always scared of our basement just because it was a basement and I was a kid. And so I went to the bottom of the steps and it was pitch black. And I heard Freddy Krueger laughing. But like I had figured out like, oh, I can wake myself up. I know how to wake myself up. Mm-hmm. And so I walked down there almost to not really intimidate him or anything, but to kind of show like I'm a tough kid. I can handle this. I can wake myself up. So I walked down the steps and I'm sitting down there and I hear him laughing and doing his thing. And I closed my eyes. I think I had my eyes open and I said something like, oh, I'm not scared of you because I can wake myself up. And so I closed my eyes to do the thing that wakes myself up. And in my dream, I can't wake up.
Oh, no.
I opened my eyes and guess who's standing there staring at me?
With his big razor-like claws.
Yeah. That dream has stuck with me. But that's like what this is. Like, oh, I've got a thing that works. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Mm-hmm. And at some point, it didn't work. And we did an episode. If you like creepy, go back to the Language of Bromance Broloween episode from this year. It's like it was released in October something. It's like 226, I think, or 227. We had an actual paranormal investigator on our show. Jason is his name, not our Jason, but a different Jason. Mm-hmm. And he talks about something that reminded me exactly of this because he had a situation where he felt like there's a presence in his room. And whenever he's been on an investigation or feels this, he like thinks of a white light enveloping him and he starts pushing it out. And he doesn't know if that actually is doing anything or not, but he says it always makes him feel better. But in this specific situation, whenever he did it, mm-hmm. it would work for a second, but then it would like the presence would come back.
Oh, God.
And that's the gist I got with this is like his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it works until it doesn't. And then you're kind of like, okay, I don't understand why it worked in the first place. Now it's not working. Now what do I do? Do I count to 14? Will that work?
No kidding. Yeah, it that would be terrible to have something like that you can rely on and depend on to keep you safe and you know, feel like something is enveloping you and keeping that distance, and then to find that it's not working would be completely terrifying. Yeah. It would. That damn ghost, I'd have to say probably so far out of the ghosts, that damn basement ghost still probably creeps me out. But this bowler hat guy was definitely up there because that was very shocking to me when Luke hears that noise in the hallway, the tapping of that cane. and not knowing what it is. So he gets up to investigate, opens the door, and it's just there. It's like, oh, fuck. It's like, well, you just don't expect to see something, really. You do, but then when you do, you're still scared and shocked.
But it seems like Luke is the only one so far that we've seen it has, like, seeing these things like for long periods of time. There's the basement ghost that grabbed him. There's Abigail, who he talks to. And then there's the floating ghost. So it seems like he's the one that kind of like sees these things more vividly. Everybody else may be like in, but like it's flashes of it or sounds, but he's like interacted with these things that we know of first.
Well, yeah, he does. It does seem, if you, I guess, add up the experiences that we know and have seen, it's probably Luke. But we do know Bentneck Lady does visit.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
You know, Nell quite a lot. I don't know if maybe that's a twin thing. I don't know. That she also sees the Bentneck Lady. She talks about it, like, all the time. And her parents reference it too, like, oh, Bentneck Lady again, when they ask her, you know, she's had a nightmare. Like, this is apparently happening like nearly every night that she's being visited by her and being tormented by her and that she sees her. But Luke does have the best friend, Abigail, a little dead girl in a blue dress in the garden. He has had the experience with the basement ghost and then this bowler hat ghost. So those are the ones that we know of. It seems he's had more, vivid. Yes, has been touched and assaulted by a ghost because it tore his shirt and like tried to grab him, do something with him. I don't know what its intention was, but it was doing something to him, which sounds completely horrible. Cause it's enough to see it, but for one to like actually physically touch you or attack you, just see.
Well, we don't know. I've got the sense that it drug him and somehow he ended back up in the thing. That's the sense I've got.
Oh, Jesus. I'm not going to fucking sleep tonight. I can tell already. I have goosebumps on top of my goosebumps right now. I just cannot deal with this damn show. It is scaring the shit out of me. That was pretty damn creepy and it was pretty damn shocking. It's kind of like you knew something was going to be there, but then for it to be there and Luke lingered way too damn long in that doorway. I would have been like,
oh yeah,
fuck, and like slammed the door. I wouldn't have been as quiet as what he was.
Well, it all comes back to that. Like whenever you get scared, you look at it and you try to scream, but you just look at it like an idiot. Like
it's
I feel
true.
Like that's a theme of this whole thing. And if there's a fight or flight, I'm a flight person. And I've got a story because I came around a corner one day and my wife put a 3-foot toy Ninja Turtle in our hallway that you cut down. It was dark and I saw it. And it was like the height of like the leprechaun. I probably jumped 10 feet, screamed, ran all the way down the hallway back to where I came from. And it triggered in my head. I'm like, that was a fucking Ninja Turtle toy chest. And in the kitchen, my wife is just laughing.
Oh, I love your wife. That's hilarious.
She's like, I thought you would like it. I'm like, I do, but maybe a little bit of a heads up would have been nice.
Oh, my God. That's cracking me up.
But yeah, my number one is just the floating man, the floating ghost man.
Didn't like it. I mean, I liked it because it scared the shit out of me, and I do like to be. I like to be scared when it's on TV. When it's in real life, I don't appreciate it so much. I like it when I can control it because I can turn off my TV and turn something happy on and get me out of that mood. Oh my God, good ghost this week, that's for sure. Well, my number one was not the bowler hat guy. He's definitely makes an impact, and he's in my notes. But I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about the twin thing. Because you mentioned it earlier, Luke woke up very similar to the other siblings. They all kind of remember, they all kind of jolted up out of bed at like the same time. And it seems to indicate that's when something happened to Nell and when she died, probably. Luke is clearly feeling that more in this episode than what anyone else has. You can see how it does affect him, and it is due to that psychic connection. I don't have a twin. I don't have twins in my family. I haven't been able to like really talk to anybody about. I've heard stories, and you read things, but as like as me talking to people or having a firsthand experience, I don't know. But I've always kind of heard of how, you know, twins just kind of can sense things about each other, like they know if they're sad or upset or something like that. So I thought it was really kind of interesting to kind of take a deeper dive in, or that. I guess the powers that be in the show took a little bit of a deeper dive, because it makes sense. You know, we've all heard stories about twins, you know, kind of sharing a special bond. And so I thought it was kind of cool that they went this way. But this one kind of went a little bit deeper. We know that there's some special things in this family. The females in the family seem to be more sensitive and have different types of gifts. But Luke, you know, kind of shares this with Nell, and you can see him, he wakes up, he's rubbing his neck when he gets up. Mm-hmm. His legs are stiff. He's very cold, and he keeps rubbing his neck all throughout the episode. Like, he keeps just like, what the hell is going on? And he even says something to Joey, like, I think I slept on her wrong. You know, don't know what's going on, but I'm, you know, he talks about being cold and, very stiff. And it's got him so, like, he did get the shit beat out of him for sure, but he is like so distressed. It's like, I feel like Nell's dead. He doesn't know it yet, but that's what I think he's feeling. Like, not only did he wake up when it happened, as all the siblings did, but he actually feels it, because we know that they are feeling what the other feels. When they were little, Nellie was able to pick up on Luke's feelings, like when he was happy or when he was scared, because she's like, no, you're scared. And he's like, how do you know? And she says, because I'm scared.
Yeah.
Or when he was happy, when he got the that hat, when his mom had found the bowler hat and his dad lets him have it. And, you know, she's like, no, he's happy. And she's like, well, how do you know? Just like, it's a twin thing, you know? Yeah. So she can feel what he's feeling. He can feel what she's feeling. And so we know she's dead. He doesn't know, but I feel like it's pretty clear that's what he's feeling. And I think how terrible that must be. And you can see how that has weighed on him. Like, he looks strung out. And that's what he was telling Steve there at the end. I thought that was kind of interesting, because, you know, you were talking about that dinner that they had with Steve when he was 30 days out. And he's like, you know, she went through it with me, talking about Joey. Like, do you know what it's like to go through withdrawal? And he was talking about the chills and the shakes and how terrible withdrawal or going through that is. And that's essentially kind of like what he was going through. It's like those same, it was for a different reason, but it was kind of those same kind of feelings. He's like, dude, it feels like I'm going through withdrawal, but I'm not, I'm sober. Remember when he tells Steve there at that very end?
I was thinking it was like him experiencing her death, but yeah, was it like twin withdrawal? Like, maybe, whatever connection they had, they were kind of feeding off of it. Now that that's gone, only way his body knows to react is like a withdrawal.
Yeah, I think it could be like a twofold thing.
Hmm.
Like, he is feeling what she's feeling, which is death, but also he's lost his twin.
And, interesting.
You know, that's kind of bigger than just losing a sibling. I feel like that there's that strong connection that twins have. So, I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting and sad. Very sad. But that was my number one.
I like it. That's a really good number one.
Yeah. Do you have any notes?
No, we kind of touched on everything from my note wise. So I'm curious to see what notes you have.
Just a couple. So in this episode, we kind of learned about Liv's power. She talked to Theo about it, and she talks about, you know, how her grandmother did and she does, and now with Theo. But this episode was interesting because we actually kind of got a demonstration of her power, and that's when she took that old shawl out of the box and she wrapped it around her, and she kind of gets this look on her face, this lit up look on her face. And she was telling Hugh about what she saw in the room. She's like, I feel like I'm having deja vu. And she starts describing what she sees in the room. And it was very specific. So it wasn't like just a feeling. Like, it was almost like it took her to that place. Mm-hmm. And she can, like, she's sitting there and that's exactly what she sees. And it's, so I thought that was kind of interesting. I won't go into detail about everything. Y'all can watch the episode and know what she said. But I thought that it was cool that we get a little peek of that. It's not always kind of in your face that she has this or whatever, but it's kind of like a reminder. And so we learn about it. Now we're seeing a demonstration. What are we going to get the next time? Are we going to get a little bit more? Cause we're only in episode 4. So I thought that was kind of cool that we get that little reminder and we get a little bit more of it. But then going into that, she got that feeling from the shawl, and we know that she gets like feelings from things. Did she sense, do you think, something from that bowler hat? when she had it, because she picked it up was hesitant to let Luke have it. That's what I got from that little scene was, you know, because she was excited to give Nellie the buttons. Remember the little tin of buttons that she found, and she thought that was great. So, but I wonder when she picked up that bowler hat, it seemed like something just very subtle came across her face. Yeah. And she was very hesitant to let Luke have it. And he was so excited about it. And Hugh was like, oh, sure, just let him have it. And she's kind of like, okay, you know, just like, well, we'll see where this goes. And then he gets it. And then here we have the creepy tall ghost. He's like, that's my fucking hat. What are you?
Yeah. Little bastard. Quit taking my hat. Just stay on your Ninja Turtle pillow. I'm not taking your Ninja Turtle pillow. Exactly. Little bastard coming into my house.
Exactly. He just wants his hat back. He's completely innocent. People are just taking this the wrong way. He was going from room to room looking for his bowler hat.
Yeah. And what he was looking like, he heard him like sigh under the bed. And, like, we cut it. But what he did is I saw the extended edition of this. He opened the things like, hey, have you seen my bowling shoes too? Did you take those too? Like, I can't walk on the ground until I have my bowling shoes. That's why I'm floating.
Ugh. That was creepy. That was a really good little touch.
Yeah.
You know, that damn ghost. He's literally, you can see his damn feet hovering off the ground.
I love that. Ugh. Oh, and it's like, it's vivid too. Like, I love that these ghosts that are like in this, they're like real looking. They're not like misty or kind of like wafty. It's like, these are real entities. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which any kind of like sound at night, I hate. Our house right now, we've got like a security system and a battery's dead somewhere. I don't know where or how to fix it, but every like 16 hours, our chimer just starts beeping incessantly. And we have to go off and press the star button. So like 11 o'clock at night, I'm just about to pass out. I just hear beep, 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 beep.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Like, fuck. Don't be a, I'd rather be the ghost because he's only going thump, thump.
No.
It's got a beat to it.
No, I don't. Well, at least that you can explain that, you know, it's your alarm system. Yeah, it's not some, you know, something falling in the house. Something's fallen off the wall, a picture. That's something's true. Fallen off of a cabinet or a noise on the floor. But you have dogs. I have dogs. You have dogs. Do they ever do anything weird, like stare at something in the corner of a room, but there's nothing there, or do anything weird, or bark at something that you don't see or hear, and it freaks you out?
They are great at barking at stuff that isn't there and then freaks the shit out of you. So, like, our front door is, like, it's, like, a pretty big glass window.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's right into our living room. So they'll just, like, start barking at it, but they'll see the reflection of the TV into it or something like that. But they're like, stop fucking barking, because your heart's racing and you're scared and you're pissed off. But then you're like, oh God, what if there is somebody out there?
Yeah.
And I've got a 120-pound American bulldog, and when he goes to that front door and puts his paws on it, like, he stands like 5'6". Like, nobody's fucking with that dog.
Yes. I love bulldogs. They're so darn cute.
Oh, yeah. He's been mopey tonight. I don't know what his deal is.
It's seasonal depression. Fucking winter, no sun, no cold weather pisses me off. I know. I've been a grumpy ass. For anybody that listens to this that knows me personally, I apologize for my behavior, because I'm an asshole during this season.
I am too. I've noticed that myself. I need to get you and my wife like together to talk about it and be like, listen, let's just move to Hawaii. Let's get it figured out. We'll podcast in Hawaii.
I am all about that.
For that.
I am all about that, and I'm 100% behind that idea as well. I need to move somewhere, not only in a warmer climate, because no matter where I'm at, if I'm cold, I'm pissy. if there is not a lot of sunshine, it's okay in the summer because I know it's probably going to come back tomorrow, but I know in the fall and winter, it's just fucking gone, and that pisses me off because I like sunshine, but so does everyone, but...
Guess what? I just got off work and it's pitch black. Hooray.
Exactly. Well, and right now for us, even if, you know, it's daytime, the fucking sun is gone. It's so damn gray and gloomy. It's just fucking depressing, and it makes me a cranky ass. So I apologize if anybody that knows me, and if you do know me, you know that I am that way. But I thought that was interesting just to talk a little bit about Liv and if she picked up anything from the bowler hat, because to me, she had that sense of hesitation. Like, she... It was very subtle, that look that came across her face when she picked it up, and just her hesitation, I felt, in giving it to Luke. Because, you know, there are people that believe, and I can kind of get behind it too, that there's energy in things. Like,
yeah, I can believe that.
You know, old items, antiques, or something that's meant something to someone and they've passed, that there can be an energy to a room or a place, or sometimes in certain things. I think it can get overblown, but I can get behind that potential. So just thought that was kind of interesting. The question about what happened to his friend Joey, why did she run from the facility and where the hell did she go, is kind of some outstanding questions that I have.
I guess it was kind of a note. So did you catch the tone that she kind of like flipped when they were talking about him writing down his things for his next stage?
Yes, it's right here in my notes, Betty. Yeah. Good job.
And he talked about like, oh, maybe I should talk about how I lived in a haunted house. And she kind of like, that's when her demeanor changed.
Yeah.
Now, again, maybe her haunting wasn't like a real life haunting. Maybe it was more of a, hey, I was in a really bad situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of wonder if that was, it triggered something that kind of pushed her to relapse.
Yeah, because she was very, that's what was in my notes, is she was really, really quiet when Luke was talking about being stuck on the fourth step, because he was kind of talking about, you know, well, I've done some really shitty things to my family. You know, I've stolen from them. I've lied to them. I've put them through hell for all these years. And she's like, yeah, well, you know, we've all done some pretty bad things. And she, it's just kind of like where she, it's just paraphrasing there, but she kind of left it, you know, there. So yeah. And then the next morning she was gone. So it kind of makes you wonder, did, you know, I don't know why she left, but did that, is that, you know, kind of what was behind it a little bit. So I don't know if we'll get those answered or not, but just some questions that I have. Let's see, the bowler hat ghost. I was just like, nope, that was, I was done with that. Well, I've got notes here that says the buttons down on the phone thing. What was there something? I feel like I haven't watched this episode in a couple days, so
I know he used the buttons to represent the seven for each of the family members, but I don't remember them by the phone.
I don't know what that note is for, so just disregard that. Pretend I didn't say anything there, folks. What do you think happened after Luke? So Luke's under the bed. He screams when that damn ghost lifts up the sheet and it cuts. What do you think happened after?
I don't know. I mean, that's, again, like, what happened with the ghost in the basement if, like, his parents didn't come down? Like,
it's true, yeah.
A lot of times the things I think, like, most ghosts, like, whenever you hear things, like, they can't hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in this situation, Luke's had two ghosts potentially physically assault him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, did he scream and his sister woke up? Then did she see it? Did the dad come in and...
Right. Yeah. Did Nellie wake up and was the thing gone?
Yeah.
You know, or I'm just curious as to, because that he screamed, I think I screamed the same pitch as Luke did.
Yes. That's, oh, yeah. If that happened, that's the octave I would reach.
Well, I was just watching this show and I got to that point. I was like, ah! Screamed just as loud. My dogs, God love them for, they're like, you fucking crazy lady. Stop watching this goddamn show so we can get some peace at night. Why are you watching this shit? Again, with, they had really cool segues between the decades. I always like to point that out because I love it. I think they do it so brilliantly in this episode. So when the dogs are barking, when Luke was in the park, in the junkie park, and then it jumps to young Luke in bed that gets woken up by the dogs that they keep hearing at night. And again, what's up with those damn dogs? Only the kids can hear them.
Yep.
And they keep getting woken up by them. And then it's like they get woken up by them and something bad happens or terrible happens or something. It's, so far anyway, I feel like that's what it kind of, what I'm getting from it. And what the, you know, even the Dudleys are like, what dogs? We don't hear any dogs.
No,
the parents
dogs
don't hear any dogs, but the kids do. So it's like, what's up with those damn dogs? It's just freaky. And yeah, so I like that. That's all my notes that I have.
Good notes. I like it.
Oh, okay. So with that, the news portion of the show is going to be, again, our popular segment, and that is the hidden ghosts of this episode. We'll see if you guys found the same ghost. Did you find ghosts that weren't mentioned on the list? If you don't already know, I know there was a lot of interest in me providing this list that I'm getting this from. So I did put that on our Facebook page, and that was on Twitter as well. if you want to look that up from about a week or so ago. I did share the link if you want to look at these hidden ghosts, because they do provide some screenshots if you want to be scared all over again looking at the screenshots. So the first one that we have this week is the man behind the chair. So we saw a man behind a lamp an episode or two ago when Hugh was running with young Luke and young Nellie down the hallway, and there was a creepy ghost standing just behind this lamp, and all you could see was his face. He kind of looks very similar in this episode as well. We can't see his head, so it's kind of hard to tell, but there's a figure behind the chair in the room behind Luke and Nell just over 8 minutes in this excellent episode. And he's kind of standing just as they always do, kind of in the background. He's kind of on the right side a little bit. So go look for him. The next one is the blonde woman in the hall. When Hugh and Olivia are having their nice little moment as they dream of their perfect home, which most definitely is not Hill House. Take a look and see if you see a blonde figure by the window. And this is as Hugh and Olivia are standing in, I don't know if that's a library, whatever it was, where she was having her deja vu moment. If you look past that down the hallway, there's a blonde woman standing there. Don't think she's supposed to be there.
Get out of the shot, Linda.
Ugh.
That's actually be the best thing with the show. Like, it'd
be hilarious.
Intern accidentally gets in the shot. You're like, yeah, fuck it. They'll think it's a ghost.
Someone stand. Yeah, that's. I think there's been speculation and some jokes about that. Like, oh, that asshole standing in the damn frame. Oh, it's okay. We're gonna have him as a hidden ghost. It totally works.
Everybody just has to dress in like 60s or fit like old style outfits, just right. In case.
You got to have the period clothes on. That's for sure. Just in case that happens. This one was really disturbing when I saw it. I totally missed it. So I'm glad that this was pointed out to me, because I missed it whenever I was watching the show, even three times. I watched this episode three times. This is during the time when Luke and Nellie are in the kitchen there at Hill House, and they're having their little discussion about, it's that little telephone thingy.
Oh, yeah.
In the kitchen. So they're in the kitchen and they are on the right side of the screen. If you look all the way to the left where the glass doors are. So this one is a tough, even if you pause it. So as Nell and Luke are getting coins stuck in the communication system, that phone thing in the house, there's a face looking back at them in the glass cabinet across the kitchen. And this is a really good screenshot. I wish that I could like show this to you. So I hope you guys click that link and follow it and see and catch these in case you can't pause it as you're watching it, because they can be kind of hard to pause, but that one is pretty damn, it's a pretty clear face and kind of disturbing. I did find one that was not in the article. When Luke is running down the stairs, he is like running for his life. You get a shot of him running down the stairs. If you look to the right in the back like entryway, there are two ghosts tucked behind the stairs in the archway. And it
seems like you always see a couple there.
Yeah, I think we've seen them before. And those two are there again.
It's not mentioned. I think it was maybe too obvious, but when they were talking on that telephone thing, did you see the old lady ghost and the reflection?
I didn't include that in my hidden ghost because I think most people probably saw that it. One, yeah. If you were watching and paying attention, if you're not looking at your phone,
yeah,
you know, and you're not distracted, if you were into the episode, I didn't
include
that one.
That one seemed a bit too on the nose, but I thought I'd mention it just in case.
It's totally worth mentioning because it was creepy as fuck.
Yes, it was. That one made me kind of say out loud, like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, that was because I was looking, I think I was looking more at Luke's reflection because it's like his reflection is on the left side of that thing. I'm calling it a phone. I know it's not a phone. It's like an old-fashioned intercom system that people have in their house, but it looks like a goddamn phone. I was kind of saw his reflection, and it was very just creepy as how that the forms of that thing took the form of this creepy old lady that kept saying Clara. She kept calling for Clara when they were downstairs, and Luke and Nellie were like, is somebody else up there? And she's like, well, who? Because they were, you know, the coins weren't going through, or the buttons, sorry. And they heard that voice going, Clara. Like, nope.
Burning the house down, kids.
I've seen and heard way too much. I don't need that in my life at all. But anyway, those are all of the hidden ghosts that I have for this week. I'd be interested if you guys found any others that we haven't mentioned for this week. Can't wait for next week, I think.
Like it. Good stuff.
Yeah. And so next segment is messages from the room beyond the red door. It's our listener feedback portion. Why don't you take this one, Sean?
All right, so our first one comes from Paik Allen. So such a heavy episode. The scene with little Luke under the bed hiding from floaty bowler hat Slender Man was capital C creepy. Luke has been so traumatized his whole life, and now the one person who truly got him is gone, and he's already feeling it before he even knew. I really hope he's able to lean on his family and doesn't wind up with the same fate as his sister.
No kidding. I'm rooting for Luke here for sure. Next one is from Doug Fick. He says, Luke saying it is a twin thing tells me he felt his sister's death and then her body temperature lower as well as her rigor mortis set in. Perhaps the house can feel everyone's weaknesses and preys upon that until it gets what it wants. I'm not sure what the bowler hat man is wanting from Luke other than his hat back. I had to put on the subtitles at the end to tell what Steven says to Luke about Nell's death. Then I got it. He said it was suicide, and Luke says, no, it wasn't. So a ghost may have killed Nell. Notice when Joey kisses Luke, you can see her hand slide down his hip and take the money. Not cool, Joey, not cool. I am hooked like Luke on smack with this one. Try the diaper thing, everyone, and let me know how that works out. Doug has been claiming to be using a diaper as he's watching these shows because he claims he's pissing his pants.
Was a good call, though. We probably should have mentioned it, but when Steve does say, "Hey, you know, it was suicide," and he's like, "No, it wasn't." Like that's what we've been left with,
right?
You're like, what the fuck was it then?
I know.
That's what I think we're probably going to find out next episode.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out, Doug, because we did not mention that earlier, and we probably should have that. That is kind of. Because we don't really know. We don't even really know what her injuries are. We can only speculate that, you know, Luke keeps rubbing his neck, which just, you know, looking at Nell and the state that she was in when she arrived there at the funeral home, we can just presume that that's an injury that she has. But we don't know anything. So yeah, that is very telling. And, you know, what the hell was it? Because I think if anybody would be able to know, it would be Luke with that connection that they have. Thanks, Doug.
Our next one comes from Lindsay Slitch. Every episode is great, but honestly, I didn't love this one. It was a little slow for me. The scares didn't really get to me, and I don't really enjoy watching junkies screw over their families and loved ones. I hate seeing poor Luke in such a bad spot. All in all, my least favorite episode of the season, although still enjoyable for the most part. Took your advice and watched Hush over the weekend. Great movie. I loved it. Kate Siegel did a great job, especially considering she had absolutely no dialogue. Rima, my curiosity about your own real-life ghost experiences has me so intrigued. I'm so curious. I've never had an experience myself, which is good because I'm pretty sure I'd legit die of fright. But I love hearing other people's experiences. I hope someday you'll share. I feel like if you're going to share that, Rima, that might have to be a Broloween exclusive if you ever want to share it. But I'm not going to – that's stuff I don't like to push people to because I know people have had experiences like, I don't want to talk about it. And I can respect that for sure.
Well, I've had more than one experience. I could probably try and figure out something to share. I thank you, Lindsay, for being curious. Maybe one day I'll share more things. But, I won't say I was as traumatized as the kids in Hill House. I was not physically altercated by a ghost. But I've had enough happen that has scared the hell out of me. I will tell you, the reason I was asking you about your dogs earlier is I had a dog. There was a house that we lived in. My daughter was little. And just putting some of these things together, I've talked multiple times about when my kid was little, she was that creepy kid in the movies that she would wake up. You know, I was a night owl. I was up very, very late. So at midnight, she would very often wake up and she wouldn't speak. And, you know, I know lots of people go through this whole thing, but that on top of my dog would very frequently act very strange, would just give me this creepy feeling that we had in the house. And this was not my most extreme experience at all. This is very light that happened in this house. So that's why I'm okay talking about it. But we had a Rottweiler love that dog so much. And he would, in various places in the house, and especially in the hallway where we had this, where you could look into the hallway from the living room, and he would stand on the edge of the, kind of back from the hallway a little bit in the living room. And it would be dark, it would be night, and he would be just very quiet. He could be sleeping next to me in the living room as I'm watching TV late at night. My husband worked nights at the time, so I was up late at night by myself. The dog would get up very quietly, make no noise, but like something woke him up, his ears would perk up like he either heard or saw something, get up and walk over to a spot in the living room and then stare up at the hallway, in the dark hallway, and just sit there forever. And I would be like, and I'd be expecting him to like bark or growl. Sometimes he'd get a low growl, but it was very quiet. But I'd be like, Dodgy, what are you doing, bud? What's going
Stop
on?
Stop it, Dodgy. You're freaking me out.
Yeah, I don't like what you're doing, bud. Do you hear something? Do you see something? And he would not like look at me at all. He was such a good dog that he would listen to me. But if he was on the, and this happened countless times. This was not just a one-time event. This happened quite often and at various places. He would stare at a corner up in the living room and just stare for like an hour. And it was just like, I'm getting the hell out of here. Someone get a priest and some holy water and some sage and do something with this house. But anyway, I digress. You wanted to hear about an experience. That's about as far as I'm willing to go at this point with something that light. That's very, very light, because probably hundreds of people have that same story right now. Anyway, sorry, I digress. We'll get on with feedback. Maureen Favo says, this is the episode where the message about being haunted, not necessarily by literal ghosts, but the ghosts of our lives came through and made me realize the story was about so much more than a haunting. Dark, creepy episode, but so important to the overall story. So see, we got someone else that kind of makes you think something else happened. But I don't know. The house has got to be haunted. I think it just is to an extreme level. And something else that happened either to those kids or to that house. We have another voicemail from our friend Steve Brown.
Hi, Raymond and Sean. It's Steve. And just had a couple real quick notes about the twin thing. I didn't get a lot of notes. I like this episode. It's really good. I'd like to see these things from Luke's perspective. But I did figure something out that I don't think I realized before. Luke is actually the first one who knows that something happened in Eleanor. Obviously, he doesn't know exactly what happened, but I realized if the timeline is the way it is that he wakes up in the middle of the night choking, and that's the same time everybody else wakes up in the middle of the night. But then the next morning, he gets up and his friend has left, and so he leaves, and then it's that night that he goes to Steven's to try to steal the iPad and stuff, and Steven meets him and sees him and then tells him, the iPad has to stay here, gives him the couple $100. And then Steven goes upstairs and Luke leaves. And then Steven sees his ghost from the very first episode. And the dad calls him and says that she's dead. And then it's got to be a whole nother, 12 hours or more, because then it's the next night, or maybe it's later that same night that Stephen found out about Nell's death, that he goes to the treatment center, and then Luke calls the treatment center and they go get him. So it just is interesting to me that I couldn't remember what the time frame was, how long Nell was in the house before she was discovered. So obviously it couldn't have been more than a day or so. And I forgot about all the dog barking stuff and even like the dog that Luke sees when he's sitting on the bench and then it disappears. And I don't know if that was a real dog or not. And this show is doing really well at not letting us know, and we're not going to know for a while, whether these things are all in their head or if they're actually seeing ghosts, or is this just a family of crazies. So this went on a whole lot longer than I thought it was going to go, but can't wait to hear what you guys thought of the twin thing.
Awesome.
Good points. Yeah, I like that the show's kind of like things that they've trickled in throughout kind of keep popping back up. And like you said, it's been four episodes. It feels like it's been a lot longer than four episodes. Like, I feel like we've gotten a lot of information in just four individual episodes. We've had some of these Netflix shows where they're 10 episodes long. You're like, oh, fuck, they could have probably been like seven or eight. But like this one so far is doing really well. I'm really enjoying it.
I really enjoy it. And I It doesn't feel, it's like, it feels like from the time the episode starts till it's over, you're like, oh my God, it's over already. You know, I feel like you're, for me, I'm so engaged and so involved in the story and trying to figure out what is happening here with the family and what, you know, what this mystery is, that I'm loving it. And it's not, you know, like, oh shit, can we just be done with it already?
So. Which I haven't really felt that with any of them, but you get to episode 7, 8, it's like, okay, I'm ready for it to, I'm ready for something new.
Well, they probably could have wrapped this up like an episode or two ago, is sometimes where you're at sometimes. Yeah. with a couple, like we probably didn't need 10 episodes. We probably could have done this in 8 or something. But I think with Hill House, we're definitely, I'm interested to see that, because we have gotten 4 episodes in. We've so far gotten 4 of the stories from siblings. We have one more sibling. So what then happens? What kind of episodes are we going to get? I wonder once, like the centric stories of, you know, the kids.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe you have the 5 kids, maybe the lady that runs the
lives there, Mrs. Yeah, Dudley,
the female Dudley, the male Dudley, the dad, the mom, and then maybe all of them for episode 10.
Maybe, but it'll be interesting to see where it goes or how they're going to structure the episodes in the second half. Once we've gotten all of it, because I mean, I feel like it's safe to say that we're next going to get Nell.
Yeah.
You know, since we've had all the other kids. So I think it's safe to say that. And I don't think it spoils anything to say that. But then it's like, okay, so that takes care of the 5 kids. Where are they going from here? Will they focus on parents? Like you said, will it go something out, you know, outside of that? Or, you know, so I don't know. It's interesting. But I love getting everyone's feedback. I even appreciated some not so great feedback from someone that didn't enjoy the episode. Lindsay, I would love to hear if you listen to I hope you're listening this week to this episode and see if your opinion has changed at all after listening to Sean and I discuss it this week. I'd love to hear from you again. So if you would kindly take a moment to let me know, I'd love you for it. And thank you everyone that has taken the time to leave us some feedback. We've gotten some really great feedback from all of our great listeners who take the time. I know everybody's busy. So when you take that time, you know, out of your day to leave us a voicemail, write us an email, or leave us some feedback on our Facebook page, that means a lot, because I know I'm a really busy person. So to take that effort to do that means a lot. So thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. So big news. So this, you're probably seeing your feed, is coming out on a Tuesday. And so this Friday, we're going to be covering the 5th episode from The Haunting of Hill House, titled The Bit Neck Lady. And this episode description is, a dark specter with an unsettling silhouette has haunted Nell since she was a girl. Now the bent neck lady is back. Hasta la vista, Nell. And she's calling Nell home. Just so you know, so it's not official yet, but we can probably be safe to say that a show that Rima and I both love to cover, A Black Mirror, should be coming out towards the end of December. So to make sure we get through Haunting of Hill House in time, we're going to start doubling up if we can. So we'll release one episode on a Tuesday, one on a Friday, and that should get us right finished with Haunting of Hill House the day before, potentially, Black Mirror comes out, and then we're going to jump into Black Mirror.
Yeehaw! I know we have lots of fans out there of Black Mirror. We are huge fans of Black Mirror. Yes. So I think a lot of people were excited about that. That did leak today. Now, is it official, unofficial? We don't know. Nothing has been confirmed. But we do know from last year, they never confirmed a date. It just released on Netflix there at the end of December. And that is what was released today, or leaked today, was December 28th, a potential release date. So that is why we've decided to release these double episodes for your listening pleasure, but also to get us in a good place for when Black Mirror is released, so we can start chit-chatting about that. So we hope that you guys join us for that. And we are also excited for you to join our paranormal investigation for updates from Hill House. You can follow us on Twitter at StrangeTCast.
You can like us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/StrangerTCast. You can check us out on Instagram at Strange_Indeed_Pod.
You can email us at StrangerThingsCastPod@gmail.com. And you can also find us on the TV Time app.
You can find Strange Indeed and a bunch of other great podcasts like House Podcastica at podcastica.com. Go out and leave a review for Strange Indeed or any of the other great Podcastica podcasts on Apple Podcast.
So many great podcasts on podcastica.com and House Podcastica. Kristen is banging out Game of Thrones rewatch like nobody's business. I mean, holy shit.
For April.
Oh my God. April 2019. I think we don't have an official date again, but we know it's in April. I think we all know what we're going to be doing that month. And it's my birthday month. So
nice. Happy birthday from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Double D's and the powers that be at HBO for my early birthday present. Because we all know by now, right, that I do like, I take the whole month. I celebrate the entire month.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's I will be saying all April, just FYI, everyone, I'm going to say it's my birthday the entire month. And you're going to write in and say, shut the fuck up. We know. Anyway, so yeah, be sure to check out Kristen. She's doing a bang up job. And, you know, Sean and I might have been on a couple episodes. If you really love us, go check us out on some House Podcastic episodes. And make sure to check out Sean and his other podcast, because that man loves to podcast. And his Language of Bromance that comes out every Sunday.
And if you're doing a little bit of holiday shopping, make sure you check out our Amazon link. It is in the show notes. Give us a little bit of a kickback and no extra charge to you.
That's right. We love Amazon.
All right. Well, that's our show. Episode 65, The Twin Thing.
Until next time, I'm Rima.
And I'm Sean.
And Des Combs is Strange Indeed.